So, yeah, the retreat is called the Boundless Heart of Metta. And so I thought I'd begin this evening by reading the Buddha's words on metta, the Metta Sutta. He says, "This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing, in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world." So, yeah, this is the vision that can really inspire our practice. And I don't know how you felt today. There may be moments where that vision feels quite close, and there be moments where actually things have felt very different from that. And again, to let you know, to remind you some very good news, if you haven't heard it before, it's actually really normal and usual and perfectly okay that on retreat, and particularly on the first day, all kinds of experiences will arise that maybe don't immediately remind you of that kind of vision. Yeah. In another teaching of the Buddha's, he talks of the five hindrances. And these are, again, it's very helpful to know that people 2,500 years ago, people in a different culture, people in a different place, had minds that did the kind of things that our minds do. So you might have noticed today sometimes of wanting something that's not here. Yeah, so you're with the breath, you're breathing in, breathing out, and a sense of, ah, if only X, Y, Z. And the thing is with that pattern is that the X, Y, Z could be pretty much anything really. Oh, if only I was at home, or if only I could watch Netflix, or if only I was in the south of France, or if only I was in a monastery, and if only I was, you know, in Japan, or if only. So this is a pattern that comes up for us as human beings, you know, or the pattern of the opposite of that, if only I didn't have, you know, the opposite. And the first one is called sense desire, second one ill will. If only I didn't have, if only I didn't have this pain in the back. Was they called pheasants earlier, do you say? Yeah, if only the pheasant would stop making a noise. Yeah, if only, you know, I could stop thinking about ABC, the opposite of XYZ. You know, but it's something like that, isn't it? Like, if only I could get rid of something, then everything would be okay. But those two hindrances are very, very powerful in our psyche. Basically, they're pushing and pulling, isn't it? You know, if only I could push and hold this, everything would be okay. If only I could push that away, everything would be okay. And then we have times of sleepiness, again, very normal, usual, what we'd expect. At the end of our group meeting today, in one of the group that I was in, I said to people, oh, have you got any other questions, you know, meaning about their practice? And somebody said, oh, how's it been for you? Which I thought was a nice question. And I was saying, yeah, actually, I mean, I'm very happy to be here, and it has lots of lovely associations, Gaia House. And also, I've been at times sleepy today. And it can be helpful just to know that, because it's easy to set up a kind of hierarchy in our minds, isn't it? As if, you know, if I was really good at this practice, if I really knew the secret, I wouldn't be feeling this. And that, of course, starts to layer, doesn't it? Extra levels of struggle and difficulty on top of what we're already experiencing, you know. So rather than just being sleepy, or the next one is just being restless, we start to tell a story about ourselves and that experience, meaning that I'm not quite up to scratch. You know, I ought to be more. We'll go back to XYZ. Yeah. So really just emphasizing that these things are very normal. And you may notice that already starts to put a different perspective on them. We're moving from the view these are personal faults, personal flaws, to these are patterns in the human heart. And that already makes them workable. And just for completion, the fifth one is called doubt, which in this sense means a kind of a sort of indecision, really. You know, maybe I should do this, maybe I should do that. Or we might start doubting ourselves. It's okay for Jake and Zohar and everyone else here, but I'm not sure I'm right for this. And again, there are many skillful ways we can respond to these patterns when they arise. And one that over the last few years I've been drawn to again and again is this practice of rain. And you may have heard this before, many of you, but my feeling of it is actually something you can really deepen in. And rain stands for recognize, allow, investigate. Couple of different versions of the N, but the one I'll mention today is called nurture, also called non-identification in the original version. But we're recognizing these patterns, and that makes a huge difference. So as soon as you recognize something, you're not so in it. So if you don't recognize sense desire, then we're believing the story. I can't possibly be okay here and now, but I will be okay when I'm in the south of France in 2 weeks' time. Okay, that's tricky. And if you really believe it, you'll get up and leave the retreat and get to France as quick as you can. Because that's where happiness is, of course. Yeah? But so that's a liberating moment to recognize, it's sense desire here. So we're not believing the story so much. We're seeing it as a pattern. And then the A stands for allow. And again, very counterintuitive, because if we hear this word hindrance, it stands to reason, well, I need to get rid of that. So it's the opposite of allow. How do I push it away? How do I get rid of it? But actually, when we make space for things, then we often find they can move through in their own time. We can breathe with them. We can let them be here. Sometimes you can even use a phrase like, this belongs, or can this be okay too? And we see, when the resistance is not there, the pattern is experienced in a very different way. This is what Zohar was talking about yesterday, talking about is an object and the way we're relating to the object. You know, so then when that way of relating changes with the allow, we're just bringing in a friendliness, a it's okay that this is here. It begins to move through. The I stands for investigation, and sometimes I use the word curiosity. And this doesn't mean trying to work everything out intellectually. It's more primarily just that sort of sense of how does it feel right now to feel like this? Let's say you're feeling sleepy. How does it feel to feel sleepy? And you're sensing that in the body. Notice it's different from why am I so sleepy? I need to think back to years ago and trace back this pattern and work it all out. And that may lead to a more ruminative pattern. But it's just this curiosity. Yeah, how is it now to feel like this? And then the N can stand for nurture in this version from Tara Brach that I'm talking about today, where we're really explicitly bringing friendliness, metta, kindness to the experience. In many, many ways we can do that. One way that you may have explored is actually using your hand. And if you've never done this before and you'd like to even just try it now, feel free. But you can, just place a hand on the chest. And you can feel the warmth of the hand. You can feel the care. You may even move the hand a little bit. And you can even use words. You know, may I be well in the midst of this. In the midst of this. So I heard these words in the midst of, first from Christina Feldman. Whenever I teach retreats, time and time again, people say how useful those words are, because it's different, isn't it, from may I be well, meaning this has got to go away. So may I be well, meaning, you know, when the sleepiness and the aching back and the thoughts about work have all gone. But it's actually a different intention in the middle of all of that. So even though those experiences are there, may I be well. So these are practices really to deepen in and explore how we recognize, allow, investigate what's here, nurture. And I want to share an example from Tara Brach of how she worked with this with her own experience. I also really hope and trust you see that this is very intimately linked actually with metta. We find Dharma teachings are like that in so many ways, really. They overlap. They're different ways of talking about things. But, you know, these attitudes of really allowing what's here to be here, bringing a gentle curiosity to what's here, nurturing, really seeing how this quality of friendliness changes our experience. So she says, I was meditating on a rock by the Potomac River, when the reality of the coronavirus pandemic struck me fully for the first time. My heart clenched as I realized the likelihood that my pregnant daughter-in-law, who works at a hospital, could contract the virus and then spread it to her family, my son, granddaughter, and ex-husband who lives with them. My thoughts went to many friends who are older or otherwise physically vulnerable, and to those due to race and or being economically underprivileged would bear the brunt of suffering. I thought of the inmates stuck in virus-infected prisons and those packed into refugee camps around the world and on our borders. With the spiraling currents of thought, my agitation spiked and I found myself caught in the feelings of a scared, powerless, separate self. So you may not have had exactly that experience with this content today, but you can see how this arises, yeah? So through thoughts, sometimes triggered by painful sensations in the body or memories or some contact, we find ourselves in this place of distress, feeling separate in that way. Notice, interestingly, there's also a lot of care in what she's saying too, right? But we'll see how it unfolds. And then she says, thankfully, the rain meditation, which I practice regularly, started spontaneously in my mind. That's what happens if you do it a lot. So she says, I recognize the feeling with a mental note, fear, fear. I allowed the feeling, gently whispering to myself, this too belongs. This fear is not an intruder, it shouldn't be here. Now, present, I could pause and deepen my attention, investigating. I look for where the sensations of fear were strongest in my body. It was a strangling feeling in my heart, a squeezing, aching hollow, homing in to sense, what is this feeling really like? I place my hand on my heart, breathing with the fear, locating the very epicenter of the pain and the raw edge of a pulsing, aching hollowness. Surrendering all resistance, I open fully to the waves of fear as they arose and passed. I could feel my heart opening to ask what this deep, vulnerable place most needed. What was it asking for? The answer that came was to feel love, to feel belonging to something larger. Offering nurturing, my attention opened wide to the field of love and awareness that is our very universe. As I imagined love pouring into me from that vast yet very intimate presence, I could feel it bathing and saturating the fear in my heart. I sat in stillness after the rain, simply resting in the field of loving presence. Fear was still there, though being held by love, it was noticeably less intense. More significant, it no longer felt like my fear about the virus and all those affected by it. Rather, it was the world's fear that was being held in a vast and tender awareness. And then she goes on, before the pandemic, there were times when we felt the reality of fear, loss and grief, and we will continue to do so when this crisis has passed. We can know that the secret to healing is feeling the pain fully and bathing it in love. In those moments, painful feelings become the world's pain and we become loving awareness itself. Yeah, so I very much appreciate that description and how she's really with that process in her own experience. And for me, it's a very inspiring sense of what we're doing here on this retreat. That kind of transformation that she's describing. You can perhaps echo, may it be echoing in your own experience. If you notice, it's not leaving her a place of not being concerned, being aloof, not bothered. You know, the care is very much still there. Because there's a lot of care even in that initial place where she feels overwhelmed by it all and the thoughts are racing. There's a lot of care in there. But by feeling the pain, by really connecting with that, by holding that with a warm and friendly awareness, there's this experience that it's happening in a much bigger space. A much bigger space. And the feeling of separation is softened and dissolved. You notice that feeling of there's little me here with all my worries, all my concerns, and I'm kind of separate from the world and I've got to deal with it all and work it all out. And this is a shift, isn't it? To feeling connected. To feeling, yeah, spacious. And that connected, spacious heart, again, is a very caring, responsive heart. Now, I'm struck by what she says there. You know, the fear was still there. We might imagine, oh no, maybe that's all gone. But, you know, if she's writing that particularly at the time she was writing it, you know, the fear has got an intelligence in it, isn't it? There was a lot to be concerned about. There is a lot to be concerned about. But it's held in a new way. And it's a beautiful sense of what the friendliness practice can really help us to do, to make that journey. To share a little more about this quality of metta, as you may know, it's one of four qualities called the Brahma Viharas, the Brahma Viharas. And Brahma basically means something like divine, and a vihara is somewhere where you live. So these are divine places to live. I love that. And when I connect with that sense of Brahma Viharas, it always makes me think that where I live physically is somewhat secondary. I don't know about you, I grew up in London and I now live in Nottingham, and sometimes I think, oh, would it be nice to live back in London again, or maybe we should go to Liverpool or somewhere else, or maybe Nottingham's all right. And, you know, obviously it's sometimes helpful to think about those things, but what's much more important is to live with these Brahma Viharas, you know, to make these our home, you know. Friendliness, compassion, joy, equanimity, or balance of mind. There are four qualities that really are like a family, really. Sometimes I see them as four aspects of, we may say, four aspects of an awakened heart, or four aspects of an awake way of being in the world, where this basic attitude of friendliness becomes compassion when it meets suffering, becomes joy when it meets things that are delightful, and also can hold in balance that life will always bring sorrows as well as joys and pains as well as pleasure. Yeah. So this quality of metta that we're really focusing on this retreat is, you know, has its relationship with these other Brahma Viharas. And it really involves, as we practice friendliness, and we practice it to ourselves and others, it starts to make us see other people in a different way too. So there can be quite a habitual way of seeing people, which is, have you got something for me? You know, are you someone I like? And have you got something for me? You're going to be fun to be around, or can you help me in some way? Or the other side of the coin, you know, are you in my way? Are you threatening? Are you somebody difficult that I need to kind of be wary of? And then there might be a whole load of people that are kind of neither those. So you haven't got anything for me, and you're not threatening for me. So you're in that category. So we can divide other people in this way into, you know, very kind of rigid categories of those we like, those we feel more neutral about, those we don't like, find threatening. And one of the things we're doing in the metta practice is actually to reframe those ways of perceiving other people. We can train ourselves also to see in other ways. Train ourselves, for instance, to see the common humanity that is shared even between people we like, people we don't like. You know, very skillful reflection in the metta practice. Just like me, they wish to be happy. Just like me, they don't wish to suffer. Just like me, they have good days and bad days. Just like me, they have hopes and fears. So, yeah, it's moving us from more painful ways of perceiving ourselves and others. Again, Tara Brach talks about it in this book, but there can be these times when we begin to see others in a very kind of unreal way. And a very regularly used example is, how do you see the person that cuts you up in the car? Yeah. It's funny, I like this example. I don't even drive, but I like the example. But so you're driving along, and then somebody cuts in front of you, and what's the first thought? For most of us, it isn't, fellow sentient being who has good days and bad days, and maybe is on their way somewhere. No, it's, you know, that idiot who's cut me up. And you can almost see that has a kind of hyphen to it. You know, that idiot who cuts me up, as if it's kind of one word, and as if it narrows that human being into that kind of very fixed negative perception. Interestingly, tragically, propaganda actually does the same thing. So, you know, meta sometimes is described as the opposite of propaganda. You know, the way propaganda is dehumanizing, setting up a group of people as safe to hate, dislike. You know, meta is the opposite of that. There's a theologian called Martin Buber. I don't know if you've ever come across Martin Buber, but he described what he called an I-thou relationship. And an I-thou relationship is very different from an I-it relationship. An I-it relationship is the kind of relationship we have with objects, you know, things that we just use. So like there's the clock, and you know, the usual way anyway of just relating to that clock is it's useful for me, you know. So it has this use value. It's I use it while it's working. If it stops working, I put it in the recycling, and that's that. But it's something that can be sort of fixed and known and pinned down, that I-it as an object. But an I-thou relationship, the kind of relationship we might have with a person, also opens the feeling, the thought, which I really love, in a very beautiful way. You can never fully know another person. Sometimes we might use that in a bad way. Oh, you can never really know anyone, can you? But in a beautiful way, there's always more to know. There's always more to discover. You know, a person can't be reduced to a few characteristics, qualities, pin them down. That's right, I know exactly who you are now. Somebody tries to do that to us, it doesn't feel very nice, does it? It feels like we've been labelled or, you know, put in a box. But that feeling in an I-thou relationship, that the other person is something kind of beautiful and even mysterious about another person that's unfolding. And so and these are the kind of perceptions, really, that metta is encouraging, supporting. I mean, you know, later in the week we'll talk more about people we find more difficult, or relationships we find more challenging. So sorry, that's a little in-joke between me and Zohar, because we have two slightly different ways of talking that. I use this phrase, difficult person, and Zohar will speak more about why she talks about challenging relationships. And, look for that. But when we think about you know, people we find difficult, or relationships we find challenging, again, this is again where metta is very powerful there, because in those perceptions, again, there can be a reduced sense of who that person is. With metta, we begin to imaginatively sense also, well, what's led a person to be like that? You know, what's happened to a person that they're behaving in that way that's harmful? And this is never to condone behavior, by the way. It doesn't mean people, of course, act in very harmful ways. It doesn't mean we don't do what we can to stop the harm. But it's this imaginative sense of, what's led there? Looking a bit more deeply. With metta, we're never really content with the thought, oh, X is a bad person and that's all there is to it. You know, there's always more of a story there. One of my Christian friends offered a snappy phrase, which was that hurt people hurt people. You ever heard that? Hurt people hurt people. You know, people who've been hurt in the past, again, that comes out in this behavior that hurts others. The philosopher and novelist Iris Murdoch, she has a passage where she talks about this, about how reframing our perceptions is actually an ethical thing to do. Reframing our perceptions is an ethical thing to do. So this is her example. She says, a mother feels hostility to her daughter-in-law. She finds her to be a good-hearted girl, but feels that she's unpolished, lacking in refinement, perhaps a bit common. But I think she was writing this in the 1950s, Iris Murdoch, and there's something about the English class system that comes through here. Anyway, that's another story. But she's inclined to be pert and familiar, insufficiently ceremonious, brusque, sometimes positively rude, and always tiresomely juvenile. The mother doesn't like her accent or the way she dresses and feels that her son has married beneath him. That's going to be a difficult family gathering, right? But, it goes on. It says, the mother is an intelligent and well-intentioned person. So we might say, the mother is someone who's interested in meta. Yeah. And she tells herself, I'm old-fashioned and conventional. I might be prejudiced or narrow-minded. Maybe I'm being snobbish. I'm certainly jealous. Let me look again. Again, this is, to me, the voice of metta. Let me look again. And when she does so, she discovers that her daughter-in-law is not vulgar, but refreshingly simple. Not undignified, but spontaneous. Not noisy, but gay. Not tiresomely juvenile, but delightfully youthful. And so on. Yeah. So, metta is really something that can soften that very deep human tendency to make someone else a bad other or an unreal other, sometimes spoken of like this. And this quotation from Solzhenitsyn, who was a Russian dissident in the time of the Soviet Union. He says that if only there were evil people somewhere insidiously committing evil deeds, and it were only necessary to separate them from the rest of us and destroy them. But he says, but the line dividing good and evil cuts through the heart of every human being, and who is willing to destroy a piece of his own heart? And that might sound a strong word, actually, but it seems to me appropriate. That delusion that there is some group of people who they're the ones with the badness. They're the ones that we can safely hate. They're the ones that if only we can get rid of them, everything will be okay. Seeing through that delusion is so essential for creating peace and harmony and friendship in human life. Because otherwise we're always just projecting our own badness onto someone else. Okay, so some schools of psychology would talk about this, don't they? Because I don't want to feel like I'm an aggressive or hostile person and things like that. So we project it, see it in someone else. And when you do that, and then it says this, if only I can get rid of them, trying to get rid of that. But as he says, the line dividing good and evil cuts through the heart of every human being. So we can see that. If you sit in meditation long enough, it's almost like you see everything, really. we can have some of the thoughts that pop into our minds in meditation, we may not want to share them with other people. But we can just now can see that. You know, Phil, I just again share a personal example. Very often when I'm watching the news and things afterwards, if I notice, you know, there might be sort of feelings of rage or thoughts of rage. They're not the ones I put on my website, you know. Jake Dartington has been meditating since 1995 and he thinks things like this, you know. But they can be there. It's really, you know, it's like a kind of overwhelming fire of stuff. But, you know, like Tara is saying in that rain practice, you know, we really can learn to be steady in the midst of these. We can feel our ground. You know, we can feel our body on the ground. We can breathe with them. We can hear. We can listen to that which is difficult in our own heart. And if you go back to that story, it wasn't that her initial thoughts were in some way completely mistaken, were they? She was worried about all kinds of things, very often with a lot of good reason. So it's not just, oh, I got it completely wrong and I did this thing called rain. But it's more, no, if we sit with what feels more raw and vulnerable and painful, then we can hear what's within that, the care and concern that's in that. But it gets held in a different way, held with more space, held with more awareness. And then out of that we find we can act in ways that are more skillful. So, and then as always the practice is for our own well-being and for the well-being of all as we do that. So let's sit quietly together just for a couple of minutes, just to let the words of the talk settle. So, as I mentioned at the beginning, there's no need to try to remember every detail of the talk, but maybe just noticing if anything feels significant for you, meaningful, maybe an echo of that in the body. Just noticing that and taking time to be still.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.